Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Tina S. I'm your moderator and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, March the 5th. We are reading from the Big Book. We are on page 23, the first paragraph, starting with these observations would be academic and pointless, through one paragraph ending with become irritated and refuse to talk. Today's readers are readers of the, 12-step reader is Chris W. Bev M. is reading the 12 traditions. Readers of the text, Marge O., Bonnie B., and backup is Vanita L. A newcomer greeter, Felicia S., and second hour host is Robin L. And a reference number for yesterday, Wednesday, March the 4th. Reference numbers are for the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 23,258. That's 23258. The 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 23,259. That's 23259. And this is the OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeater can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. We'll now ask Chris W. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning, Chris W., Chris with a K from Nashville. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me serve.
Thanks so much, Chris W. Now I will ask Bev M., please read the 12 traditions.
Good morning, Bev M. in Wisconsin. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Less problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for allowing me to serve.
Thanks so much, Bev M. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share approximately to 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We are on page 23, the first full paragraph, starting with these observations would be academic and pointless, reading through one paragraph, ending with, or become irritated and refuse to talk. And now I will ask Marjo, please get us started.
Good morning, all. Marjo from Massachusetts. Gratefully recovered and still learning lots of more. These observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. If you ask him why he started on that last bender, the chances are he will offer you any one of 100 alibis. Sometimes these excuses have a certain plausibility, but none of them really make sense in the light of the havoc an alcoholic drinking bout creates. They sound like the philosophy of the man who, having a headache, beats himself on the head with a hammer so that he can't feel the ache. If you draw this fallacious reasoning to the attention of an alcoholic, he will laugh it off or become irritable and refuse to talk. So there's so much said in this paragraph. Sentence by sentence, I certainly lived this life. I certainly dried up, so to speak, many a time, went on a diet, tried all the latest, whatever was in the news, whatever was in the latest, you know, Red Book or McCall's or Ladies Home Journal. There was always this diet that was going to fix everything, and I believed it. I went to the weigh-in page. They were very helpful, except for someone like me that cannot just be told you can. Back then, they told you there were certain things that were, quote, free foods, and you could eat as much as you wanted, and I did. It didn't work, so that I was left with the same appetite that I had when I went in. And even though I would lose weight for a while, I would just give it up because I would think that, no, that didn't work for me. Thank God when I came to OA, some of this started to make sense. But the truth is, I didn't know what I didn't know, and I didn't know that I couldn't pick up certain things, that they were my alcoholic foods. And it didn't matter how much weight I lost on the diet. and I became that person who would be irritable and who would want to hit my head with a hammer and say, what the heck, why can't you get this? Everybody else goes on a diet, loses their 10 pounds, 5 pounds, 20 pounds, and they stick with it. And I couldn't, not knowing that when I took that, whatever that bite was, whatever was offered to me, that I finally decided, well, I lost my weight, I should be able to eat that. You know, and my personality was not pleasant either when I was eating. Absolutely was affected wholly by this disease. It wasn't just about putting the food down. It was what to do with myself when I put the food down. So a day at a time, I've learned more and more about that. I've learned about my alcoholic foods. I am eternally grateful for this program, especially for Visions. I've been here many 24 hours. I'm glad I stuck with it. And I'm happy that so many people come forward and they share what it was really like. And for me, it was just terrible. It was hard to diet. And then when I did, I got used to it for a bit. But then I would truly believe, go forward. And it would wreak havoc in my life. So with that, I pass. And thank you.
Thanks so much, Marge O. And before I take a list of names, although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you've shared on Tuesday or Wednesday, please step back. And when you give me your name, give me your first name, first initial of your last name, and where you're calling from. Who would like to share on this paragraph?
Irene.
I got Harlan and Eileen. That's all I got.
Hana, yes, R.
Judith S. P.
Manny P.
Anita L.
Robin.
Let me tell you who I got, because I missed some people. Harlan G., Eileen, Hanietta, Judith S. P., and Anita L.
Mary D.
Mariana,
Ohio. Robin P.
Mary B. Robin P. Danny P. Did I hear that? Okay, I got Harlan G., Eileen, Hanietta, Judith S. P., Anita L., Mary B., Robin P., and Danny P. If you said your name and I did not hear you, please let me know. Okay, well, we'll stop with that right now.
Kiana,
okay.
W. Ohio.
I'm sorry? Who is that?
Kiana W. from Ohio.
Kiana W.? Okay, we'll stop there and then we'll take another list after these. Okay, Harlan, please get us started here.
Thank you very much, Tina. I'm Harlan G. Uh-huh. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in Scottsdale, Arizona. Let's take a look at the main sentence in this paragraph. It says, therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. The source of the problem is my thinking, because it is my thinking that drives me into the drinking, or in our case, the eating. I cannot do anything without thinking about it first. Maybe my breathing is involuntary, or blood circulation or certain other things are not voluntary, but it is my mind that tells me it is perfectly okay to eat French fries and pizza when I weigh 500 pounds and I'm a sophomore in college. It is my mind that tells me it's okay to eat, you know, massive amounts of food. What's going on in the mind? What is the reason we do this to each other? Why does he say it's like the philosophy of the man who, having a headache, beats himself on the head with a hammer so he can't feel the ache? And what we're talking about is the way we feel when we're not eating is very different from the way people feel when they're non-compulsive overeaters. We have just gone through paragraphs of descriptions of the heavy eater, the moderate eater. But what about the real compulsive overeater? What about the person who cannot handle happiness, fear, anger, the buildup of these emotions, the boredom, the lack I cannot stand the way I feel when I'm not eating. And what we're going to be doing as we move forward in the book is we are going to substitute the effect, which is what we're looking for. Remember that the mind gets an effect from this food that people, normal eaters, do not get. They get a certain amount of ease from food, but not ease and comfort like we do. They like their food or they don't like their food. We get what Dr. Silkworth calls the effect, that sense of ease and comfort that comes instantly by eating certain foods. That is what the mind is zeroing in on. And one of the jobs of the ego is to make me feel good right now. It is intolerable for me to feel the way I feel when I'm not eating, so I eat the food in search of relief from the intenable pain of not eating. But that effect only lasts about 8-9 seconds. And then the allergy has kicked in, and I cannot stop. So what we're going to be working on as we move forward is not the body. We've already told you that any description of the alcoholic, which leaves out this physical factor, is incomplete. We've already described that. But what we're going to be doing as we move forward in this work, this endeavor to recover, is the urge to eat, if I do the steps, is simply not there. It's not that I'm fighting and using willpower not to eat pizza, not to eat French fries. I simply do not have the urge to do so because the spiritual awakening, as
gentle reminder,
steps, has substituted the effect for the effect of the food, and that's what this is all about, Charlie Brown. Thanks for your service, Tina. I appreciate it, and thank you. Pass.
Thanks so much, Harlan G. from Arizona. Next, we have Eileen. Please give me the initial of your last name and where you're calling from, followed by Haniata.
Hi, Irene S. from Ontario, Canada. Hi. Great reading. I can also very much relate to the fact, you know, that my problem centers in my mind, really, and even though I may have that abnormal reaction in my body, you know, if I don't put in the substance in my body, I wouldn't have a problem. What the line that really, really spoke to me is this analogy of the, you know, person having a headache, beating himself with a hammer. So I actually have a real-life experience with that. You know, I've been having chronic health issues, but digestive issues, and what I would do to not feel the pain, I would binge myself to sleep, essentially, so I don't feel the pain of my digestive stuff, which obviously, needless to say, would make it worse, right? And the miracle of, you know, the 12 steps is that I'm not doing that anymore, you know? That insanity has been removed, and I'm so, so grateful. It's not that my illness has gone away, chronic health condition. I still experience certain, you know, things that are interfering with the functionality, but I don't have to cope using food. And that's definitely a miracle. I also wanted to say that, you know, I wish I knew earlier that it doesn't matter what the consequences are of my compulsive eating, because I could have, you know, still a functional life, everything's going my way, you know, no cloud in the horizon, and I can still be a compulsive overeater. You know, it doesn't matter. We read about the real compulsive overeater and, you know, the qualifications of what that means. But I need to be really aware of, you know, that it doesn't matter what my outside circumstances are when it comes to compulsive eating. For example, I didn't even have any weight to lose or to gain. I was a normal size. But what matters is, do I lose control? Period. You know, do I lose control once I start? And once I'm stopped, do I pick up? Right? So that's what matters at the end of the day, and not the outside stuff, not the consequences, not, you know, broken relationships, ruined health, lost jobs, all of that stuff, obviously it adds up as my disease progresses, but the core of my disease is this loss of control when it comes to compulsive eating. So, you know, I just kind of want to say that because maybe there's some people on the line who actually, you know, are still functional. There's no interference with their daily lives, but they may still have that seed of the disease, which as the time progresses, it gets worse, never better if untreated. That's all I have to say. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thanks so much, Eileen S. from Canada. Next, we have Hanietta R., followed by Judith S. P. Please share, Hanietta.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your service. My name is Hanietta R. from Texas, Plano, Texas. And I am a recovered compulsive overeater. And I want to first welcome all the newcomers out there, whether you say your name or not. I'm so glad you're here. You're so special to me. So what hit me was, the hammer hit me. Sorry the pun, but what hit me in here was a couple of things. First, I do get a mental obsession. I do think about wanting to be on a diet, but I hated being on a diet. I did go to a couple of what you all call pay and ways. I did go to a couple of them. Atkins was my favorite diet because you could eat whatever you wanted of a certain thing. I prayed, please, God, just let me be in an accident and I have to be in a coma for a year and I'll wake up thin. You know, let me, something happens so that all I have to do is go to sleep and wake up thin. And so what happened to me was I had insurance that paid for every operation, I never had to pay a cent for an operation. And so I had operations. I had the intestinal bypass way before any of these other stuff. This was 1971 and January of 1972, sorry. And I had that. And then I had to have operation after operation after operation because of that. And then I had to have it reconnected. But I didn't care because I was thin. As soon as I had it reconnected, I gained all my weight back. And then I had two more operations to lose weight. So that's what I wanted. I wanted an easier, softer way. And they weren't so easy and they weren't so soft. But I just didn't want to work at anything. And, I laugh at myself today because every time I thought about, they say when God closes the door, he opens the window. But I had to walk into that door, smack, stab into my face 20 times, 30 times, 100 times, whatever it was, before I would even realize that there's a breeze coming in from a window that's open, you know, and I never paid attention. I didn't listen to God. I didn't listen to anything or anyone. I only wanted to do things my way. And now I realize that my way is God's way. And I'm so grateful that I believe that everything comes from God. And everything in my life did come from God. And even though I hated it when I was 16, I got so mad at God that I turned my back on him and I did everything I could to do stuff that's wrong. That's when I started being a compulsive overeater and promiscuous and stealing and lying and cheating and alcoholic and pill junkie and whatever. I got mad at God. Thank you. Today I love God, and he's my everything. I say, may God, I just love God, and he's my partner in everything. Thank you for letting me share, and again, thanks for your service. Don't quit 5 minutes before the miracle. Bye. Pass.
Thanks so much, Hanietta R. from Texas. Next, we have Judith S.P., followed by Anita L. Please share, Judith.
Good morning, Tina. Good morning, everybody. My name is Judith S.P. from Maryland. Truly grateful to be here and be recovered for this moment due to the grace and power of God. I draw fallacious reasoning, that was the way I lived my life. I would always have false reasoning. so I could do this, do that, I have to, you're doing, whatever, all the craziness that goes on in my mind. And I still am learning the difference between the brain and the mind, because the brain is all the physical parts when they do an anatomy after I pass and look at my brain. They're going to see all these parts. They're going to see what's dried up, what's blocked. And the mind, I don't think they're going to see, because that's my consciousness. The element of a person that enables them to be aware of the world and their experiences. Well, my awareness of the world and my experiences has for most of my life been skewed and totally off track. And I know, as I was sitting in my morning meditation today and feeling like I was on a runaway train on the IRT in New York City at rush hour, I'm thinking, part of me is trying to say, why are you so active? Why do you keep having all these thoughts come? Well, the why I can throw out the train door, because that's not up to me. But the excuses I give myself have really quieted down. And I'm very, very grateful we're in the part where there is a solution in step one. I'm powerless over my mind as well as my food. And when I'm not accepting the powerlessness of my mind and the sickness that has lived in there for many years, then of course my life is going to be unmanageable. So when I take myself with God's grace and support and love and give myself the opportunity to accept my illness, to accept my disease, and turn everything, every little nook and cranny, every thought, even the thoughts as I described before about being on the train, that's acceptance. I don't have to fight it. I don't have to say it should be different. The more I accept and release, I'm not going to have to bang my head. I'm not going to have to point the finger at anybody else. I'm not going to feel better or worse than anybody else. And I'm not going to be critical. But it takes daily work. I have to accept I have the disease of compulsive eating. The food has been quiet. The mind is getting quieter, but it still is very busy. And it's a one day at a program. And thank you, God, that I do have the chance to explore and work on the solution. It is up to me to do the work. And God is here to take my hand and walk me through.
And a reminder.
So thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thanks so much, Judith S.P. from Maryland. And before Anita comes on, let me remind everybody, if you've come on late, where we're reading from, we're on page 23, the first paragraph, starting with, these observations would be academic and pointless, ending with, or become irritated and refuse to talk. So next we have Anita L., followed by Mary B. Please share with us, Anita.
Good morning, everybody. This is Anita L. from outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I wanted to call in yesterday, but so many people were sharing their names at the same time, I didn't bother to try, because yesterday's paragraph was just so incredible that I could relate into, identify in with. And today, even more so. The reason why I say that is because we're talking now about the main problem. You know, I always thought that the food was my problem because I loved it so much, and I wanted more and more and more and more of it. And I couldn't stop once I started, just like they say. It's so true. However, now, especially after being in the Vision for You meeting, I've been in OA for many, many decades. However, this particular meeting really pinpoints the problem and mainly the solution, which is reading this big book and developing a relationship with God, which I didn't have for so many years. And what I want to share is that, you know, the problem of wanting to take that first bite, as was stated earlier, for ease and comfort, happened to me this past week. My mother passed away last Friday, and we buried her on Monday. And, you know, in the moment, in the stress, in the time when I need to be on and focused and being there for my sisters, etc., I'm really great at doing that. And food is not an issue because I know I must abstain from taking that first bite or I'll be totally insane. And now that it's over and her Shiva is over and I'm back at home and life is going to continue as it was in the past, now that thought came. Ooh, you know, what if I just have it? And then, you know, I shut it out. My recovering mind shuts it out. And I said to myself, I know what's going to happen because I've done it so many times. I've experimented, like it says in the big book here. I don't have to experiment anymore by taking that first bite because I know what will happen. I'm going to start taking more and more and more, and I won't be able to stop. And what will be the result of that? Insanity. And being nasty to others and not being able to be present and focused and live as God would have me be. And that is what I choose to do today. I'll stop and live as my higher power would have me be. So thank you. With that, I pass.
Thanks so much, Anita L. from Pennsylvania. Next, we have Mary B., followed by Robin P. Please tell us where you're calling from, Mary. Mary,
hi, this is Mary B. from the UK. Can you hear me okay? This is Mary B. from the UK. Is the line okay?
Yes, I can hear you now. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. This is Mary B., recovered compulsive eater from the UK. I'm grateful to be on this meeting and to have heard the reading today. And I'm grateful because it's an amazing reminder to me of the insanity of returning to try to do what I can't do safely, and that is eat like a normal person. And I have been in OA for 17 years, and I have been recovered in AA for 18 years almost. And to put down alcohol was the obsession and compulsion was lifted from me, and I just didn't want to be, wasn't that I didn't want to be the jaywalker, but a power greater than me stopped that thought, arrested that thought, and it was a thought that I could not have stopped on my own willpower. However, when it came to my compulsive eating, I have wanted to try lots of human aid and human will measures, and every time it has been like walking into the middle of moving traffic, every time I've been run over. And most recently, that has taken the form of compliance with a food plan versus true surrender to my higher power. And I pray that I have now finally surrendered to that power greater than me that can restore me to sanity, because everything that I have tried in and out of OA has not worked when it has been driven by my will and my wants and my agenda and my thinking. But when I have surrendered and taken step three and turned my will and my life over to my higher power, amazing things have happened. And I've seen that at the very, very core of my compulsive behaviour is my thinking. It is my thinking that needs to be fixed with that power greater than myself that is the ultimate authority, that is the ultimate comfort and nourishment and sustaining force for me. I have given up trying to think my way out of trying to eat like a normal person or get my way with eating or eating behaviours or any compulsive behaviours connected to how this disease manifests as a symptom in many forms. And I want to keep the focus of my recovery on the spiritual experience that I need to continue to have on a daily basis. I get that through the work that's required in this program. And sometimes it makes me uncomfortable and sometimes I don't like it. And at the same time, it keeps me alive. It's like taking my medicine every day, you know. And now as I'm living in 10, 11 and 12 and back here and ready to help anybody who's new or struggling or would like to go through the steps, I feel like I'm standing on the side of the road, pressing the button and waiting for
gentle
the
reminder
traffic to stop. And it's great to be in that place again. And, you know, I hope that this is allowing me to be of service to others to share my experience. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Mary B. from the UK. Next, we have Robin P., followed by Danny P. Please share, Robin.
Thanks, Tina. Hi, I'm Robin P. And I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater currently in Manhattan, in New York City. And, you know, I just love to think about hitting myself over the head with a hammer. I felt like that's exactly what I did. And it was such Russian roulette. And for me, it was such a disease of sabotage, you know. The illusion of control, you know, that I could control that. And just ending up hitting myself over the head with a hammer. And I've been on Broadway for a long time when I was younger. I'm now in my 60s, and I'm auditioning for a couple of things here in New York. And, you know, I went yesterday, and I had a really good audition, thank God. And I showed up, you know, abstinently and soberly. And how can I be of service? And it's such a different mindset. It's like literally the opposite. And it's such a blessing. And, you know, and I felt the adrenaline rush, you know, and I felt all that in my body. And, you know, and I felt my mind chatter. I don't want to, let's go. Just the fear. And God just turning my will and my life over to the care of God and being restored to sanity through these steps, you know, and then doing my best to do self-care. And I went to the gym, you know, and just I'm so grateful. It literally feels like being restored to sanity in my life and in using my gift the way that God wants me to use it. If that, you know, if that is God's will, and just showing up one day at a time, just with that mindset of how can I be of service to God and my fellows, and just keep reaching up and reaching out. And I'm so grateful for all of you. Literally, Vision saved my life 10 years ago and continues to save my life. And, you know, and I do agree, you know, with, of course, you know, that it's the mental obsession combined with the physical allergy. That's the part that I get to work these steps with. And I have these steps are in my toolbox every day. You know, I get to live in 10, 11, and 12 today. It's literally a miracle. No matter what happens, God's got me, as long as I'm willing to participate in my own recovery. And God bless all of you with a very blessed abstinent day, and I pass. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Robin P. from currently in New York. Next, we have Danny P., followed by Kiana. Please share, Danny. Danny, star one. Okay, maybe Danny didn't say her name. Okay, Kiana, please share with us.
Hi. Yes, this is Kiana W. from Akron, Ohio. Can I be heard? Okay, sorry about
yes.
that. Okay, so one of the things in this reading, thank you for everybody's service. The first sentence, these observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, right? And so I was just thinking like, okay, if I don't ingest the allergy, then this this would be a moot point. I wouldn't even have to go through this. However, the crazy insanity of the thought that I did do that, I did pick it up again, even getting down to a right-sized body and thinking that, like someone has said in the past, like weighing and measuring just a little bit of my alcoholic food, you know, it was okay as long as the weight didn't show up on my body. But it's the craziness. And I watched my father die of the disease of alcoholism. And I would say to him in the hospital, the doctor said, you can't drink anymore. If you keep drinking, you're going to die. And I thought he was just so insane that he would keep drinking. But this is what I did with the food. And it never dawned on me. I had this mental blindness that I would pick up the food over and over and over again. And it's like, and I would take that hammer and beat myself in the head, but then be very judgmental about everybody else around me who just couldn't get it, who couldn't do anything differently as long as it wasn't the food, because that was acceptable to me at one point. But I was killing myself, and I'm so grateful that God has rescued me. He gives all the glory, because without him, I am truly powerless. But one day at a time, I can learn how to live with my mental obsession. But the first thing, very first thing, is not to ingest the allergy. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Kiana W. And before we take another list, let me remind you where we're reading from. It's page 23, first paragraph. These observations would be academic and pointless. Reading through one paragraph, ending with, or become irritated and refuse to talk. And then, we have time for about five more shares who would like to share.
Okay. Alice A.
Can you hear that? Alice A. Is somebody
G.
there?
Roz
G.
Monica T.
Alice A., Julie G., Roz G., Monica T. I have room for one more. All right, let's go with that. Alice A., please share with us.
Thank you. Thank you for your service. This is Alice A. in Alabama, recovering one day at a time. You know, I always like to start my shares with saying that I was 75 years old before I found any kind of sustained recovery. And I am certainly not bragging about that. Who wants to admit it took 50 plus years to find recovery? But for the newcomer or the chronic relapser, and I was one, there is hope. It's never too late. You know, and in reading this paragraph, I never could understand why I could diet, I could lose weight, but the minute I tried to eat normally, all the weight would come back plus more. And I guess the bottom line is there is I was not a normal eater. Or specifically, why I could be driving down the road, all would be okay, but as I passed a convenience store, I thought everything would be better if I had something to eat. This paragraph in the doctor's opinion tells me the mental obsession that sends me to the food, and that it is the mental obsession that sends me to the food. And once I take that first bite, my disease is in control. My journey in OA has been long and with detours, many relapses. But the bottom line is I had to find a higher power and be willing to turn my life over to this higher power. All the abstinence, all the meetings, all the outreach calls won't do it. What I had to have is that relationship. And I thank God for coming into my life and doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Are you calling from, Alice? Okay, that was Alice
Alabama.
A. Sorry, I didn't get that from Alabama. And next we have Julie G., followed by Roz G. Please share, Julie.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for your service and to everyone who's doing service on this meeting. I'm Julie G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in central Pennsylvania. I'm grateful for the opportunity to share on this paragraph, you know, this sentence, which I have a box around and stars around, therefore the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. And what that tells me is that I can know all I want about the foods that trigger the allergy of the body for me, right? The foods that will set the terrible cycle in motion. But what becomes more important to me once I have done that is to work the steps so that I can identify. For me, it was learning and understanding, asking God, what is the exact nature of my wrong thinking? How has that manifested in wrong, counterproductive, self-destructive actions? And then to clean that up and ask God to help me stay aware of what is it that then might activate the obsession of the mind. The obsession of the mind is something that exists in me. I have come to learn and believe and accept that I have a mind that is prone to infection. It is prone to being infected with dishonesty, with self-centered thinking, disturbance or resentment that can fester if it is left unaddressed, untreated, unchecked. And so for me, I do need to turn to God, and it helps me to turn to God when I see those things crop up now. But it also helps me to build my immunity. And the ways that I build my immunity are just this: to be here, to listen, to hear the God of my understanding communicate to me through others, through this literature, through conversations on outreach calls, to carry the message that there is hope. And for me, I'm so grateful to a sponsor who lovingly walked beside me as I went through these steps, continues to talk with me about how it's going as I try to live this life. And so I know what can help me build immunity, and I know what can make me susceptible. When I was trying to quit smoking, I didn't go outside with the smokers at work. If I was trying to quit drinking, I wouldn't hang out in a bar. You know, writers talk about, you know, not being afraid. Yes, thank you. I just need to avoid those things that can set me off and bring up dishonesty. But anyway, I'm grateful to share this morning, and I'll pass with that.
Thanks so much, Julie G. from Pennsylvania. Next, we have Roz G., followed by Monica T. Please share, Roz.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm Roz G., and I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm recovered. Thank you, God, in Palmdale, California. And, the big book says to continue to watch for selfish dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And those, where do those center in my mind? And, you know, in the country that I live in, there's a lot of drama every day, and I cannot pretend to say that it doesn't bother me. It bothers me a lot. And I get selfish, or I get resentful. And at the job I work at recently, I work with teenagers, and dishonesty is that I think teenagers are going to behave like a mature adult, and that's just not the case. I've worked with them for years, but they, you know, teenagers do not have a fully developed adult brain, and they don't think about the consequences of their behavior. But I want them to do that, and it bothers me. So I've learned from a big book teacher, it's not only just this full-on resentment, but when I get disturbed, a disturbance can be when my teenage student does something that is really annoying, to when there is a big problem in my country. You know, it's all the same thing. And where does this center in my mind? People aren't doing things the way I want them to do. And then the thought will come, an ice cream, a bowl of ice cream is soft and creamy and it will help me. But that is a lie. So I thank God for the phone and for that I can be honest and talk to people and say, you know what, I this really sounds good right now. Or it even happens when I'm excited about something. Oh, wow, I'm doing this one particular thing that's really exciting, and there's pizza or there's this and this, and wait a minute, I need to make a phone call. So, you know, my thinking is the problem. And a broken brain can't fix a broken brain. And even with years and years in Overeaters Anonymous, I still have thoughts. So I'm grateful for recovery, for the phone, and for people that I can be honest with. And instead of refusing to talk, to simply talk about it and to be honest about my feelings about things, when I'm resentful about things, or when I'm dishonest about things. And I thank God for my God squad, and that, you know, they don't judge me. They're just going to say, hey, I've done the same thing, or let's talk about it. Let's bring it to God. Let's pray about it and ask, what would you help me do? And I'll just say thank you. I guess.
Thanks so much, Roz G. from California. And next we have Monica T. Please share, Monica.
Good morning, everyone. This is Monica T. I'm a real compulsive overeater in Florida. So we're in the big book, and we're in the chapter, There Is a Solution, but Bill really knows us here, and he's trying to hammer home what our main problem is. And my main problem is that it centers in my mind. I have a mind that doesn't work like other people. And I have a mind that tells me lies, and I believe it every single time. And he talks about, you know, having excuses. You know, why did you do that? Well, you know, there's a certain plausibility. You know, there's a quality of being believable in these excuses. But do they really make sense in the light of what it does to me? So my mental obsession here. So I'm now going to have to change my focus. Why am I powerless mentally? You know, when there's no power in my system against this. You know, this has been shown to me over and over and over for years and decades. Why? You know, my mind is not working like other people, and it tells me a lie. It's going to be okay this time. Oh, it'll be different this time. Oh, you lost all your weight. You're good to go here. Well, you're only going to have one. These plausible excuses, but they're not. They're not. And so he's still, you know, bringing up this problem I have. This problem I have is the mental obsession. And when my mind is telling me that I don't have a disease and I'm okay, what in the world is going to be bigger than us? And so we're going to find out what the solution is here later, but my own personal experience has been the spiritual experience, the spiritual awakening, spiritual awakening as a result of working the steps. God comes in. God takes away the mental obsession. So it's a non-issue. Wow, what a miracle. Thank God for this. But I got to do my work every single day because sometimes I get lazy or I just don't want to, and I stomp my feet. And, you know, how's that working for you, Monica? Not good. But it's a simple solution, and when I work it, it works, and God is more powerful than this mental obsession of my mind. And thank you all for being here, and I pass.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Monica. We have about a minute if anybody wants to take it. Monica T. from Florida. Anybody wants a minute?
I'll take it. This is Natalie.
All right. Go for it, Natalie.
Thank you. This is Natalie S. from Indiana. And I really was thinking about how much I wanted approval. And it was really my ego, because as a kid, my mom would always plan these diets and whatnot. And then she would go off and how would I want that approval? I want to show that I could do this work. I could stay on a diet. I could, you know, lose weight even though I didn't have to. And at some point, it became my ego-driven ideas that got me into trouble with, you know, wanting to kill myself with exercise or thinking a higher number on output was going to make me better than everybody else. And so I'm just really grateful that God now wants to right-size my ego so that my thinking can be more in line with what he wants me to do. And if I can plug into that power and keep my ego in check, he helps my thinking stay right-sized. So but I'm just really grateful that he's showing me how much I can get in my own way. And it's really not it's to be accepted and to be better than. It's not to be one with. And I have to keep that in line and in check every minute of every day. And that's the. I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Natalie from Indiana. All right. Thank you to everyone who shared. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. And the share ID for today, March the 5th, Thursday, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 23,261. That's 23261. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Bonnie B., please read a vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Keep you until then.
Thanks, Tina. Thank you so much. Bonnie B. from Florida. We're covered by the grace of God today. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. I'll pass.